Welcome to the Deep Dive. Get ready, because today we're exploring some really imaginative ideas. We're jumping into how different movements have envisioned the future. It's pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, the source material we're diving into is called Visions of the Future, Futurism, Afrofuturism, Solarpunk, and Atompunk. And it's a really fascinating look at how people have, you know, dreamt up tomorrow, often based on the anxieties and excitements of their own times.
Right. So our mission today is to unpack these different visions. We'll look at the art, the ideas they inspired, and try to figure out what they tell us about the futures they imagined. And maybe, yeah, what they tell us about us right now.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's get into it. Where do we start? Which movement kind of put future front and center first?
That would definitely be futurism. It really burst onto the scene, mainly in Italy, back in 1909, Filippo Tommaso Marinetti.
1909, wow, okay, that's specific. Mm-hmm. What was his, like, core idea then? What was driving it?
He was just completely captivated by the machine age. I mean, utterly. He saw a world defined by speed, by danger, and this whole new kind of beauty he found in efficiency and power.
Efficiency and power. Like technology.
Exactly. Like the roaring engine of a car. That was the symbol.
Okay, so it wasn't a gentle vision then?
No, not at all. It was aggressive, dynamic, all about shedding the past, you know, embracing the velocity of the modern world.
So really rooted in the tech of that moment.
Mm.
But today, when we talk futurism, it feels broader. People talk about AI, space travel, merging humans and machines. That kind of
thing. Oh, absolutely. The scale is totally different now. But that core idea, that embrace of technology, speed, dynamism, that definitely seems to carry through. You can see the roots.
You can see the art from back then too, right? The source mentions examples.
Yes, definitely. Like Giacomo Balla's painting, Dynamism of a Dog on a Leash, that's from 1912. Or Umberto Boccioni's sculpture, Unique Forms of Continuity in Space, from 1913. Incredible piece.
Oh, Balla's painting. Yeah, the one with the blurry dog legs and leash.
That's the one. It's trying to capture emotion itself, right, on a static canvas.
And the Boccioni sculpture.
Wow.
It looks like it's actually being shaped by wind, by force, just pushing forward.
Exactly. These works aren't just showing you something. They're trying to embody the feeling of speed, the energy Marinetti was talking about.
Hmm. It does make you wonder, though.
Yeah.
How is this different from just, you know, science fiction?
Yeah.
Is it? And the material asks, should we even, like, value art that predicted futures that just never happened?
That's a really good question. Futurism, especially early futurism, often felt more prescriptive, maybe, than sci-fi.
Prescriptive? How so?
Well, it wasn't always just exploring a possible future. It was often saying, this is the future we should build. We need this speed, this power.
Ah, okay. Whereas sci-fi is more, what if?
Right, more exploratory. What if this happened? What are the consequences, good or bad?
Uh-huh.
And as for valuing failed predictions, maybe their value isn't in being right.
So what is it then?
Maybe it's how vividly they captured the desires, the feelers, the energy of the time they were made. They tell us about their present, maybe more than our future.
That makes sense. It's about the imagination behind it.
Yeah.
And speaking of imagination shaping different futures, the material then pivots, right? It talks about how this interest in tech and speculation was adapted later on.
Yeah, by artists and writers imagining liberation, empowerment for communities who'd often been, well, marginalized.
Which brings us to
Afrofuturism. Exactly. Its roots go way back, even to the space age. You had artists looking to the cosmos, you know, as a literal space, but also metaphorical, a place free from earthly oppression.
Wow. From the space age all the way to something like Marvel's Wakanda.
Yeah, Wakanda Forever, Black Panther. Those are huge contemporary examples. It shows how the core ideas evolved and spread.
That jump is massive. Mm. From Sunray's cosmic jazz to a global blockbuster. But the material asks a key question here. What makes something truly Afrofuturist? Is it just like black characters plus future tech?
It's definitely more complex than that. It's about using elements of sci-fi, fantasy, tech, even magical realism to explore the history, the culture, the experiences of the African diaspora. It's a way to reclaim stories, critique the present, and envision empowered futures.
And often by connecting advanced tech with, say, ancient traditions or spiritual ideas.
Precisely. It's that blend that's often key.
Okay, and the examples listed really show that range. You mentioned Sun Ra, Space is the Place from 73, pure cosmic jazz.
Yeah, a classic.
Then comparing the 77 Black Panther comic cover to the 2018 movie poster.
Yeah.
You really see the visual evolution.
Definitely. The aesthetic shifts, but the core idea develops.
And Grace Jones's look in Nightclubbing, 81. Flying Lotus's sound in Galaxy and Janaki 2010, Kendrick Lamar's Black Panther soundtrack in 2018.
And the art. Cyrus Kaburu's work, like Miel Ya Blue from 2020, that intricate wearable art. Stunning.
Each one uses these future elements to talk about identity, possibility within the Black experience, right?
Exactly. It shows Afrofuturism isn't just an aesthetic, it's a critical practice, a creative one, rooted in specific cultural and historical contexts.
Which leads straight to the next question the material raises. Could you have, say, Asia Futurism or Amerifuturist?
It's a fascinating thought. It makes you think about what's specific to the Afro part of Afrofuturism. I mean, artists from any culture can use speculative fiction to explore their own histories and futures, of course.
But Afrofuturism speaks to something unique.
Yeah, it speaks directly to that specific history of displacement, struggle, resilience within the African diaspora. These visions aren't generic. They come from a particular place, tell particular stories.
Okay, that makes sense. It's deeply rooted. So, moving from visions often rooted in past or present struggles.
Yeah.
Let's just shift gears to something that feels much more, well, hopeful. Solar punk.
Ah, yes, solar punk. The material presents this as a future where technology and nature aren't enemies. They actually exist in harmony.
It's such a refreshing counterpoint to all the dystopias we usually see.
Totally. Think about those arcologies in SimCity 2000. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. The giant green buildings. Self-sufficient communities.
Exactly. Covered in greenery, communal living. That really captures the architectural spirit of solar punk. Technology enabling sustainable living within nature, integrated.
And the material points out this isn't just fiction, right? These ideas are actually influencing things like architecture, game design.
For sure. You see it in designs for vertical farms, sustainable city planning, integrating renewables seamlessly, even in ideas about cooperative social structures. It's about, like, practical optimism.
The list of examples here is so vibrant. You've got Miyazaki's Nausicaa from way back in 84.
A foundational text, really.
The metal band. Gojira's Global Warming Song from 2005, bits of Overwatch from 2016 showing those green high-tech cities.
N.K. Jemisin's story, The Ones Who Stay and Fight from 2020, really powerful.
Common Song Imagine from 2021, Christian Holland's art, Wind Farmer 22, that game Terra Nil from 23.
Yeah, the ecological restoration game. Very solar punk.
Utopian Art Machine's Solar Punk Anthem 24. Okay. And even looking ahead to Lindy Young's We Cast Our Eyes to the Unknowable, now next year.
It's a broad range, and seeing that, the material asks some good questions, like, how do these works manage to feel optimistic about tech when so much else is grim?
That's a big one.
And have any of these dreams actually started happening? Are we seeing bits of solar punk in the real world?
And the big question for you, the listener, would you want to live in a solar punk future? It's hard not to feel drawn to it, isn't it? Clean energy, green cities, tech used for healing. And yeah, you can argue elements are appearing. Solar power is way more common. Vertical farming is real. Sustainable design is a focus. It feels less like fantasy, more like an aspiration.
Yeah, it offers a really a powerful narrative that technology, if we change our perspective, could lead to a thriving, balanced future, not just doom and gloom.
Okay, so from that hopeful vision, let's take a short turn, something quite different, a retro future, or maybe an alternate present. Let's talk atom punk.
Right, atom punk. This imagines a world where that whole atomic age vibe, the aesthetic, the tech optimism after World War II just kept going. It didn't really stop.
So it extrapolated the 50s and 60s forward to now.
Pretty much. It's not always post-apocalyptic like Fallout sometimes is, but it's a world steeped in mid-century design, atomic power, and everyday life, that whole cultural feel.
Less mushroom cloud, more chrome fins on everything.
Right.
Ray guns that look like kitchen appliances, atomic cars maybe.
Exactly. That blend of like earnest belief in progress through the atom mixed with that specific post-war consumer style.
The source mentions Fallout the games and the TV show as key examples.
Oh yeah, they absolutely nail that vibe, that cheerful yet deeply unsettling retro-futuristic world.
And the music examples listed really take you there. Sons of the Pioneers, Old Man Adam from 45.
Right at the dawn of the age.
The Golden Gate Quartet's Adam and Evil from 46, A Warning. And Five Star's Atom Bomb Baby from 57, pure rockabilly fun.
And you can't forget Tom Lehrer's So Long Mom, a song for World War III from 65. Dark humor at its finest.
Wow. That music really shows the whole range of reactions back then, doesn't it? Awe, fear, fascination, even that kind of gallows humor.
It grounds the whole atom punk aesthetic in the real feelings of the time. It wasn't just cool fins, there was anxiety underneath.
Which brings us back to the listener question. Would you want to live in an atom punk version of today?
Hey, It's a fun thought experiment, right? The style is cool, the tech, but maybe with that constant hum of atomic possibility, good and bad.
Yeah, definitely something to think about. Wow, okay, we have covered a lot of ground here. From Marinetti's obsession with speed and futurism, the art it sparked.
To the really deep, empowering cultural visions of Afrofuturism.
And that hopeful, harmonious solar punk.
And finally, dipping into that weirdly fascinating retro alternate present of Atom Punk.
It's amazing. Exploring these different visions, all drawn from the source material Visions of the Future, it just highlights the incredible power of imagination, doesn't it?
Absolutely. These movements, they aren't just predicting gadgets or, you know, future tech. They're expressing hopes, deep fears, anxieties, desires. About technology, sure, but also identity, society, our place in the universe.
They're like windows, really. Windows into the minds and the times of the people who dreamed them up. So here's a final thought, building on all that. Considering how these different punk movements reflect very specific anxieties, hopes, technological fascinations from their eras, what do the visions of the future that captivate you today reveal about the present world we're living in right now?
That's definitely something to reflect on into our next deep dive.